This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Live here inside the web studio. Ira's in the MDN studios in the MGO blog roundtable with us once again, and probably the last time here until the fall. Of course, the MGO blog crew is led by Brian Cook, BC. How are you?
Good. I'm not coming back in the fall, by the way.
What do you mean you're not coming back?
Well, I mean, just, you know, it's... We're done with football forever.
Basketball starts late fall.
Okay, yeah.
Overshirt and come back in the fall.
We'll do that.
We have Seth also from MGO Blog. Seth, how are you this morning?
Yeah, I'm also going pro. I'm going to be talking about Lions next fall.
And of course, Craig isn't going anywhere. He's like, okay, you can't let Craig go away for a whole off season. No, Craig will stick around. He'll continue to stick around. But the last time for at least a few months that the crew is together, and that gives us an opportunity to talk about a real possibility, transfer portal possibility on the basketball side of things. I think he's going to go Michigan's way. I think you guys do too. Coastal Carolina, we're calling them combo guard, Sun Belt Player of the Year, Devontae Jones. Let's dive right in. And tell me what you guys think of this, though. A lot of Devontae's. That's the other thing. How many Devontae's can there be in this world? The Wolverines are adding another Devontae to their basketball program. What do you guys think of this Devontae?
Well, I mean, he can obviously go get a bucket, right? Like, he's 23 points a game. Pretty efficient doing that, which is impressive. you worry about his shot a little bit. It's very much a set shot, so he's not going to be able to, like, you know, come off a pick and roll and pull up, probably. And his athleticism, he's not an above the rim player. He's very, very crafty. He's much bigger than Mike Smith. He's probably going to be able to finish your contact better, not rely on that step back quite as much. But Mike Smith was a guy who really set up all his teammates a lot. And Jones is more of a guy who's got a score first mentality. He can pass, but he wants to get his own.
Yeah. A part of the issue with him, or not issue, or one of the hard parts of evaluating him, is that his first 2 years, he was definitely a point guard. This last year, he played the two and even the three. So he was a 2-3 this last year at 6-1 at Coastal Carolina, whereas in years one and two, he was a point. And he was the Sun Belt Player of the Year, but that conference is not a great conference. It's weaker, according to KenPom, for example, than the Ivies. He isn't a great three-point shooter, but Brian's correct. He can finish around the rim, and he's pretty good in the mid-range. Excellent free-throw shooter, 86% over his career. So that isn't going to be an issue at all. My concern is that whether he's a good enough athlete to play in the Big Ten. And I just don't know. And I just haven't been able to see enough tape. I've seen highlight tape. Highlight tape isn't generally enough. I'm sure the coaching staff has seen plenty of game tape of him, and if they're offering him, they must think he can play at the Big Ten level. My primary concern, though, is I looked at his last five or six games, just statistically, and this is while he's playing the 2-3, and he's got a very low assist rate and a very high turnover rate against teams that just aren't very good. And that's whether that was a one-off or five off. I'm not sure. So Mike Smith last year, I was very enthusiastic about, but we had a good tape of him playing against Wake Forest and Sean D. Brown. And you could see that, yeah, there's a guy that's a guy who could play at the Big Ten level. With Devontae Jones, I'm just, you know, at this point, uncertain. But Michigan certainly needs a point coming in. Freshman point guards are notoriously slow to develop. Even Curbelo, who's really a skilled guy at Illinois this year, was slow out of the gate, and it took him a while to sort of gain his footing. So we'll see. I mean, Michigan has to do this, and if Juwan and his staff are convinced that Devontae Jones is, you know, is an answer, then I guess I'm willing to go with it. But I have my questions. So,
well, I don't think Michigan is going to need to rely on him as much as they relied on Mike Smith this year, right? So, yeah. Mike Smith was a starter, played 30 plus minutes a game.
Yeah.
I don't think that you're going to need that from Devontae Jones. Like, he's going to be a guy who, if he works out, yeah, he's probably going to play, what, 20 minutes a game? Because you're going to want to get Frankie a significant amount of time. For Kobe sure. Bufkin is going to get 10 to 15 minutes at least. Eli mm-hmm. Brooks is going to get 30 plus minutes. So the amount of minutes you need to fill, the role that you're filling is not the same. So if he settles into being like a 15 minutes a game bench guy who comes off the bench and gives you some instant offense, that's a plus. And I think that's something that he's capable of.
Seth?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going into the season thinking that Frankie Collins is going to be your guy, but you just need to find someone who can come off the bench and kind of give you some insurance in case Frankie's not working out, especially at the beginning, then that's what you're going for. You're going for the best bench guard you can find, right? And if you're not going to be being able to offer a Mike Smith role, this is kind of the realm that you get. I like that he can shoot the free throws. Brian mentioned the set shot. It's kind of it's a little bit better than Xavier Simpson's, but not that much better. I do think that his KenPom numbers are not really going to be reflective of what he's going to do, just because A, Sun Belt, and B, his role changed so much last year because that team is just filled with point guards. And I think that was one of the reasons he wanted to transfer too, is that all they have are guys who can assist, and he was kind of the one who was charged with getting points. And I think that you know, crafty around the rim is one thing. I don't know how that translates against, you know, the bigs in the Big Ten, which are a little bit different than the Sun Belt. But, you know, he can distribute. He had a top 50 assist rate the year before that on a team that was just not great at shooting at all. So I think that there's, you know, this is what you can get. This is this is kind of what you wanted.
See, I guess I look at him as a little bit more than you know, rummaging the transfer portal. Consider who else was on them. You know, Penny at Memphis and Texas and Texas Tech. You had you have some pretty prime competition for him. But I agree with Brian's outlook here. Frankie Collins, without question, puts Michigan in a different point guard situation than they were in last year. And in Devontae Jones, you get a veteran guy that I don't think that they're bringing in with the idea that he's definitely a bench guy. I think they're bringing him in with the idea that, hey, he could be a bench guy, but if we need him to be a starter out the gate, then we can do that, and he can help us bring Frankie along. He gives us the ability to bring him along without throwing him in the fire. You use the word crafty. That's his game. He is not an explosive athlete, but he has a knack for getting guys on his hip. Guys achieve leverage in different ways. I think obviously he's going to be put in ball screen situations, but, you know, he's a decent shooter. I think he's like 37% clip from three.
No.
He was 33 last year.
33, and that was his high mark. He was 32 the prior year.
He had 37 in conference play.
Conference only.
Well, so he has shown the ability at times to hit a shot.
He'll be okay. Like, if you leave him open, he'll be a good option, but he's not going to pull up.
And I'm talking about it from the standpoint of, you know, how does he get leverage? Is he going to be a guy that's going to be a knockdown shooter? I don't anticipate him going the Sean D. Brown route and being a 32% three-point shooter at Wake Forest, turning into a 42% three-point shooter at Michigan. Don't see that, but he's going to get higher quality looks. if he's a decent enough shooter to allow for leverage on closeouts, that's the key. And, you know, Xavier Simpson, they're closing out. You're letting him shoot. This doesn't seem like a let you shoot guy. And he's crafty enough that if he gets you on his hip, he can finish through contact. That was the thing that maybe stuck out to me the most in this film. Good court vision, especially in transition. He's not, he doesn't have to do what Mike Smith did, but can he be a veteran guy, a steadying presence that can go out and be a contributor and allow you to bring Frankie along at a steady pace? I think he can do that.
I think that's possible. I also think he, as I mentioned, I think he's going to be a good defender. I think there's a good chance he'll be a good defender. When he was playing point in his second year, I think he was number 18 in the country in steal rate. And he's a bigger, sturdier guy. So I think there's a chance he could be a good defender. And that's worth a lot. That's half the game.
Well, you know, from my perspective, you're looking at 80 minutes at the 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And 30 of those are going to go to Eli Brooks. And correct. Before, you needed to get 50 out of Bufkin, Collins, and Zeb Jackson.
Yeah.
And maybe a little Barnes. And now that felt questionable, right? Like maybe that works out. Maybe that's a good option. Maybe that's solid. Now adding Jones, I feel like those 50 minutes are probably going to be at least solid, maybe better.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm feeling better about that scenario now. And, you know, again, this is not, I want to be clear. This is not saying Frankie can't be the starter out the gate. It's just me. He doesn't have to be. It's kind of what I'm getting at. I don't want to put a ceiling on him and tell people that, oh no, there's no way Frankie's going to be the starter. He very well could be, but I think there's a lot that goes into it. I think they are. It's not just about his game. Is he ready maturity wise to take the reins? I think they're looking at everything at this point, from, you know, are you on time for Zoom meetings and things like that. They're looking at all of that to kind of gauge his readiness.
What kid is on time for Zoom meetings?
Don't judge people.
Are your kids on time? My kids are never on time.
I'm just saying. I think as you are, if you're Michigan and this is. Look, they're going into this season looking to not take a single step. They want winning the Big Ten, going, you know, Final Four national championship contention. You better have a steady contributor at that point guard spot, especially with all the youthful contributors that you expect to step into the fold. They now have that. It gives them some breathing room for a young point guard and Frankie Collins to, if he's not quite ready to take the reins, whether it's, you know, understanding the system or, you know, being the guy that is first in the gym and last out of it, gives you some time to infuse him with that, you know, once he gets here.
I want to clarify that I was not talking about like rummaging the bin. I'm saying that there's a certain level of point guard out there where, like, maybe Jacob Young is that level, but, like, you have to offer that guy the starting job. And you're saying you're coming in to play 30, 35 minutes, and that's going to be your job. And you have to get a guy under that level because you may have Frankie blow up. And the last thing you want is a guy in your locker room who was brought here for a role that he doesn't get to play. So I think that this is, like, the best you could get at that level.
I don't really know if Devontae Jones is a downgrade from Jacob Young, just because I've seen Jacob Young play.
Man, Beeline was like, man, it's not a coach in the Big Ten that would love Jacob Young on his team. And I know that was a guy.
The way that Jacob Young plays, there's no way that guy's not not looking for a place to start.
He flashy steals and not a whole lot else.
he wants the ball.
If Beeline sat down and crunched the tape, he'd change his mind. He'd be like, nah. My 2-point defense gets worse with this guy on the floor. Come on, man.
All right, so now let's big picture it. Let's assume that Devontae Jones is in the fold. You know what the roster looks like now. Let's play this game, this projection game. Is Michigan a Final Four contender in your eyes next year?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you have Hunter Dickinson back. You have Eli Brooks back. You know, you have Brandon Johns as a senior at the four. You have Musa Diabate backing up the 4 and 5. So, like, those 80 minutes are spoken for. You know, I think Caleb Houston is going to be very, very plug and play. If you just watch him at Montverde, like, his game is college ready. Like, he doesn't push it. If he's got a closeout to attack, he attacks it. If he's got an open shot, he takes it. You know, he's a good defender. He's long. He can get to the bucket. He's a great shooter. And so you're looking at like a minimum freshman Zach Ervin, and I'm actually going to say that he's going to be better than that. So that's your three, your starting three. I think Barnes can chip in. And then kind of that two spot, the 50 minutes where Eli isn't playing are in question. But, I mean, just look at Hunter Dickinson playing post defense last year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Michigan is going to have one of the best defenses in the country again because you have that guy in his second year. You have Giabate coming in. You have Eli Brooks back. Like, they don't have a Franz Wagner, probably. He hasn't announced yet. Why isn't he announced, Sam?
I'm not drawing anything.
That's a great question.
Look, I am not drawing anything in the way of optimism. I haven't been given reason to draw anything in the way of optimism from that yet. I don't know if that's by design. I'm just telling you, I don't have any inside information to suggest that he's coming back. I'm not playing coy here. Okay.
Aren't they taking finals in a couple of weeks? Wouldn't that kind of be the spot?
No, people just – no. So, I mean, we've often theorized that Tom Izzo has all of his, like, players' grandmothers in his basement. And that's why, like, if Rocket Watts comes back, that's because he, like, grandma is in the basement. I think Mo Wagner has Franz in his basement. And until he says he's coming back for his junior year, he can't come out. That's the theory.
Yeah, look, I will certainly do some digging, but that's the kind of thing that I would expect to be volunteered. Like, people,
sure, yeah. I mean, he's not coming back. Let's just stipulate that. But I think you've got a very high defensive baseline, and then where are you going to get offense from? Well, Hunter Dickinson's a good place to start, and then you've got a guy who's the perfect like Sullinger / Diebler kickout guy in Houston. So you're going to be able to generate a lot of offense. We saw Brandon Johns do very well in those high-low sets. So I think, you know, maybe the offense is going to take a step back just because you're not going to have quite as many dead-eye shooters. So Michigan had four guys who shot 40% from three this year, and that is a huge lift. And I don't know if we're going to be able to do that next year. But, yeah, I think contending for the Big Ten title, contending for a Final Four is a very reasonable expectation.
You know, it is a very interesting, I want you guys, as you know, Seth and Craig, to weigh in on, is it a Final Four contender next year? But, you know, just watching Shondi Bond, the quality of the looks changing for him. We even asked him, like, what do you attribute to you shooting so much better to? He said he was in the gym a lot, which I don't want to take anything away from. But you got to believe the quality of the look made a big difference for him as well. And I do wonder if that will increase the value, the ability, you know, the shooting contribution for a guy like Jones, maybe not quite as much, but at least somewhat to give them another decent, you know, 30s. Can he shoot what he shot in conference play? Can he shoot that in 18 minutes a game for Michigan? Can he be a 37% 3-point shooter here?
Jones and Sean D are very different types of shooters. Like, Brown could get a jump shot off, and one of the things that he was so good at the end of the year was it didn't matter if he was contested. Like, unless you're right up in his face, that thing was going up, and it was going to go up and go in. Jones is not that kind of shooter. He doesn't have really a jump shot. It's a set shooter. So
I hear you on that, but no one was calling Shondi Brown or expecting Shondi Brown to be a decent 3-point shooter. He was 32% for his career.
Yeah, I actually, if you go back and check the tapes, I actually thought he would be a good shooter because his mechanics were really good. And you look at how he was shooting the ball, and I thought that's going to work. And he was a very strong mechanical player. And so there was no reason why that ball wasn't going to go in for him, especially when he's getting a high quality of looks here, particularly the corner threes, the short threes. And so I don't see the same thing here at all. Plus, Shondi was probably 6'5", 6'6". And,
well, you know, so, and I'm not talking about a 10%. I'm not talking about a 10% jump. Jess, mm-hmm. can you be what you said? You guys said he's with 32% for –
So it was
37% in conference.
Yeah. Correct.
Can you just be the conference shooter? Can you be that here with the increase in quality? Because we've seen guys with ugly form be really good 3-point shooters, and like Cassius Winston had horrible form on his jump shot, and he wound, and they went in. I'm not saying he's gonna not expecting him to be anywhere close to that. I'm just wondering if the quality of shot that he's going to get here is going to be a factor. They just need, to Brian's point, you know, you got Caleb Houston, you know, you have Eli Brooks. Is there someone else that can be a deep, you know, above average, 36-37% that they can get from range? I think that that would be a huge lift for a team that I also agree with Brian is not going to be as good from three this year as they were, or next year as they were this year.
Well, there's a couple of thoughts. One is Will Cheddar. Now, I don't know. Will Cheddar can shoot the ball. He was 44-45% last year, and he was shooting a lot of them. Now, the question is, can Will Cheddar play any defense so that you can get him on the court? He does have a back to the basket game at 6'9". He can shoot the threes, an excellent shooter. But whether he's athletically ready to play defense in the Big Ten is a major league question. And whether you can put him on the court is a major league question. But can he shoot the ball? Absolutely. You know, after Houston, he may be the best shooter on the team. There's that.
Who's he going to get minutes over, though?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of him getting minutes over Giabatti or Johns is pretty tough, and he's definitely not going to play the three, right?
Well, so, here's a question, Brian. I mean, can you put Giabatti and Hunter on the court at the same time?
Yeah.
That's old school. I'm not saying it can't work, but it's pretty old school.
Well, Giabatti can step out.
I don't think he can.
He can't step out to three. He does have a jumper that he's working on. Yeah. So the thing is like, what did Michigan run a ton of with Brandon Johns on the court late in the year? High low. Can Giabatti run high low? Yeah, he can run high low.
He can.
You can invert that. You can have Hunter Dickinson in the high post and use his passing to set up Giabatti in the dunker spot. Now, I don't think it's going to be as efficient as a four out offense, but the defensive lift you'd get by having both those guys on the floor, I think makes it very survivable for 10 or 15 minutes a game. So I think, you know, you're going to see Giabatti split his time about equally between the four and five. And then, I mean, the guy who I'm looking for as like a shooter who might emerge is Barnes. Cause that guy is 6'6", very athletic.
Yeah.
You know, has a Shondy like ability to shoot very high up on his jumper. As a junior, shot 45% from three. It's really hard to get stats out of these guys, but so he has a highlight video from his junior year. And his senior year is actually still in progress. He transferred to Simeon. Seems like he's doing really well, but I can't get a denominator on the number of threes he shoots. So I'm not exactly sure how he's doing. But, you know, if he was at a 45% clip on good volume as junior, he's 6'6" and he's bouncy. Like, that's a guy who I think could be a gunner very quickly.
And, you know, that's a very fair point. And like I said, he is really an off the charts athlete. And, you know, when I watch his highlight tape, I think I mentioned this, I'm afraid that he's going to hit his head on the rim. I mean, and that's not a joke. You watch the dude go to the basket, and it's in some sense almost terrifying. But it's still a lot of freshmen. You know, and Sam asked the big question, is this a team that will compete for a Big Ten championship and a Final Four? For me, the answer is, well, what kind of point guard play do we get? And you're still looking at Frankie Collins, who's what, 5'10", 5'11", thin.
Can he play 5'10", 5'11", but wants to dunk on Chet? Like, come on, like.
Well, not only wants
he's
to
not
dunk,
he's not 5'10", 5'11", like Xavier was 5'10",
5'11",
no,
I agree.
Right?
The guy is unbelievable. I mean, I'm very excited about Frankie Collins because I think he has a ceiling that's just enormous. He's phenomenally fun to watch, aside from anything else. And so I'm a huge fan of his game. But, you know, is he going to come into the Big Ten and play defense right away? Can he run a team?
I think he's 5'10".
That's what I think. What do you think?
I guess I hadn't heard anyone. I don't know that he's 6'2", but I hadn't heard anyone say he's 5'10".
Well, maybe he's taller than that. I don't know. But when I look at his tapes, he looks like about a 5'10 or a 5'11 guy to me. Maybe I'm wrong. But I mean, yeah, Brian's right. I mean, he's fearless. He went after Will Cheddar. Chet Holmgren. With intent. With intent, yeah.
It
was like, I got to try this. This is something I have to do in my soul. And that's what I want at point guard.
I wanted to real quick, because I want to give Seth an opportunity to answer the question too. But look, guys, there's a belief among some around the program that Isaiah Barnes could wind up being the best guy in this class. There is just if he can unlock it and be the guy consistently that you saw in flashes and spurts in his high school career, he has the talent, the potential, the athletic ability to be the best combination guy. He can shoot, he can handle, he can find guys, he can play above the rim. He has all the ingredients. Now, can he put them all together? Remains to be seen. I'm not saying he will be. There are just some in the program that think he could be the best guy when it's all said and done. But Seth, I wanted to give you an opportunity to answer the final four contender question.
Yeah, I mean, they were like anything away from a Final Four last year, and this is a better team than last year. So, of course, they're going to be a Final Four contender. But the only thing I wanted to say about Cheddar is that if you're going to have a fourth guy in the front court, it's Terrence Williams. And, like, you know, his shot was not working last year, but that was part of his game before. And I imagine an offseason could bring that back. He's also got such a good rapport with Hunter Dickinson. So, like, that's a guy who can get some minutes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, right. I'm a Terrence Williams fan also. And, you know, one of the challenges for Juwan and his coaching staff is going to be, well, how do they fit all these pieces together? How do they keep people happy? How do they fit it together? How does it work? I know, and the one thing I will say is I know that Hunter Dickinson is spending a lot of time in the gym doing the right things. He's working on his right hand, which was an obvious weakness this year, and he's working on his mid-range. He's shooting threes. Now, I don't care if he shoots threes or not, because
I do.
I don't, because I'd rather have him down around the basket, to be honest. But I am happy to see him working on his right hand, because once he has any kind of right hand at all, he's going to be, you know, that was why he slid at the end of the year, when teams realize just force him to use his right hand.
And watch a Hunter in high school and NBA camp. He was an okay 3-point shooter. I'm not saying that to
his shot is fine.
Yeah, to say that he's going to be this dead eye guy or should be. I'm just saying it's not like this totally ridiculous concept or notion that he, you know, hoist a three or two next year. But let's get to a break. Be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket.
Frankie with a pick and pop big. Ah!
Yeah, if that dude, if and when, I shouldn't say when, I shouldn't take it for granted, but if he gets a jump shot, that dude's he's an absolute, absolute surefire pro.
Oh, who's that, Frankie?
Frankie.
Oh, yeah.
His lack of a shot might be a good thing.
Yeah, we might just have for him keeping for him around. Years. Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, his shooting is outside shooting is not great, but man, everything else in that game is pretty dynamic.
Hey guys, have you watched the highlight tape for Jordan Phillips?
No, I don't even know who that is.
So I think he's going to commit to Michigan. I mean, if his dad has anything to say about it, his dad was
this is the tackle from Florida.
The defense.
Yeah. Shh, don't let any of the SEC schools know about this guy, man. Yeah, I know.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But he's never been on a Power 5 visit before. Not because he hasn't been invited, but because his dad said my kid is weird. He's always training. He said he's always training. If he's not training, he's studying or playing games. And then when football season is over, it's wrestling and powerlifting. Never been on a Power 5 visit, doesn't do the camp thing. But when you watch his tape and you see this kid 6'3", 6'4", 290 pounds, taking on and defeating double teams, like, man, this should be more than Michigan, Auburn, and Miami as the big-time Power 5s that have offered him. I guess Florida State kind of messed his recruitment up early, so that's why they aren't really in it. But you don't see Bama, you don't see Ole Miss, you know, you don't see Clemson, you don't see those other programs that you would expect to see for a dude like this. I think he's going to commit. He'd have to hate it for him not to commit. Dad was like, hey, man, I want to make sure he likes it. So I got to get him in the Crown Plaza. I don't think there's a Crown Plaza in Ann Arbor. He said, I'm gonna get him a car service to pick him up at the airport and drive him around. I mean, he's really trying to make it be
Sean Duvall, paging Sean Duvall.
I mean, I can see
Ira, I wonder if they've called Golden Limo. I think you're onto something there, Mr. Weintraub.
I can see the commitment. I imagine that it's not going to be over when he commits, just because, like, if that's the only school he knows, and they're going to see the tape, and they're going to see a guy committed to Michigan from Florida, and they're going to take a look. Florida's going to want to be in on that, and Bama's going to take a look. Georgia's going to take a look.
Well, you watch his tape, and you're like, what am I missing? Mm-hmm. What am I missing? Something's not adding up, and I asked his coach about it. His coach, who's had Power Five guys, their DC played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Florida. And they're like, man, we didn't have dudes this big, during the time I was at Florida that could move like that. So the coach insists that it's because this kid just hasn't been out there, that his recruitment hasn't blown up in the way that you might expect. But he swears he's a big time player. He knows what they look like. His nephew is Jaden Hood. He knows Power Five talent. And he said, this dude is a ball player. So
who is recruiting him, Sam?
The top Power Five schools are Auburn and Miami.
Okay.
Other than Michigan. I mean, Iowa State, they're in there. Like, you got some other mid and low level Power Fives like Iowa State and Indiana, and Indiana, by the way, recruits Florida really, really well, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
And some others, but it mostly group of five schools that have offered him so far. And he hasn't done much to, put himself out there more than he already is. So that could be contributing to it as well. But still, you watch his film.
All right, coming back on radio, guys. Stand by. Count you in. And then obviously Sam take it to the top.
Gotcha.
We are back on the radio in 5, 4, 3.
We are back. We're on the Michigan Insider. Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. I believe since we were last on, did Tyler Morris commit since we were on last, or did we talk about that last week? Seth, do you remember?
I don't think we talked about it. I think he committed right around then, though.
Okay. All right. But so yay. What do you guys think of the commitment of Tyler Morris, wide receiver, Nazareth Academy, four-star, top 247 guy? What did you think of that pickup for the Maize and Blue?
He is Golden Tate. I mean, that's like the most direct comparison I've ever gotten to make, because like he's a little bit shorter than like an ideal wide receiver, but just so smooth and just has that acceleration. And just like, remember like Golden Tate, like the Lions made an entire offense out of passing him the ball in the flat and just having him do something. And like, that's what this guy does. I know that Gattis has loved him forever. I don't remember which one site liked his speed and which one was like maybe he doesn't have the greatest speed. But, I mean, just a silky, smooth wide receiver, and you need a guy like that. That, you know, Ronnie Bell's not going to be around much longer, and this is a guy who can get, 15 targets a game and turn that into 12 catches and 10 first downs.
I have to admit, I haven't looked at his tape yet, so I'm going to defer to Seth on this one. What have you seen out of him, Sam?
Oh, I think that the comparison is Ronnie Bell. I think he's Ronnie Bell with more polish and another step. I think their temperament on the field is much the same. You talk to any of the guys about Ronnie, he's always one of the toughest guys out there. Mentally tough, physically tough. You talk to the folks around Naz, and they say the same thing about Tyler Morris. So again, like Seth said, not a statuesque guy in terms of his height, but, plays bigger. He can high point the ball, but he can play in space too. Not a burner, but good speed. And again, gives you some toughness and continues Michigan's impressive show of late. And by late, I mean the last few years in the state of Illinois. Michigan has done, they've done work. They've done damage in the state of Illinois. So it's good to keep that going for them as far as recruiting momentum is concerned.
Well, yeah, and JJ, I mean, played with him until he had, and JJ only transferred because Illinois put off their season until spring. So Tyler Morris just had his junior season. And that's kind of one of the things about him is that people were talking about him like being this skinny, scrawny little dude, but they were looking at tape of him from when he was 15 years old, which, you know, if you're not a tiny little dude at 15, I don't know what you're taking, right? Like, that's pretty normal. But I talked to Todd Howard, who coaches out there, and wanted Tyler Morris on defense, but he wasn't having it. But he said, like, that is one of the best dudes to be coming through here as a person and as a player. Like, Michigan is getting a great guy. I think, like, Notre Dame would have made this a lot harder, but he got an ACL injury at the end of his season, like, one of the last games of his season. So I think that the injury probably, like, changed his recruiting timeline. Because then he kind of had to decide and make sure, and Michigan didn't have a problem with that, and I don't think it might hurt him as far as being useful right away. But you know, this is one of the top guys that Gattis wanted. He wanted, you know, this guy, and he wanted Caleb Brown, who Ohio State's going to battle us for out of Illinois. Like the moment that he got here, he's like, I'm going after AJ Henning, and then I'm going after these two guys in 2022. So.
Yeah, I think that ACL injury, and that was something that he confirmed on Twitter by, you know, retweeting a report about it. I think that played a really big role in the timeline for his decision. You know, rather than risk, you know, the opportunity at Michigan being taken by someone else, especially when he was a huge Michigan lean anyway. He was only talking about visiting Florida and Notre Dame, and those teams were clearly playing second fiddle to Michigan. Once you get that ACL injury, he's not going to play his senior year. So the odds of his recruiting profile changing tangibly aren't really high. Might as well jump on it. I think that was the thought process there. But I asked you guys something in the break about a kid who I think Michigan is on commit watch for, a kid by the name of Jordan Phillips. And I asked you guys, have you watched his tape? And, you know, a lot of people are, because he's not, you look at his ranking, 24/7 just upped his ranking to a three star, because they hadn't, you know, they hadn't been out to scout him. They went out to see him in person. He's every bit of 6'4", 290 pounds. He has, in addition to Michigan, he has Auburn and Miami as high level power fives, but it sort of falls off a cliff after that, where you got Iowa State and Indiana, some other mid and low level power fives, and then a lot of group of five schools. And so you look at his tape, even as under the radar as he is, relatively speaking, as a guy that big, that havoc wreaking, but to not have that kind of recruiting profile, it makes you ask yourself why. And I want to show a clip. I want to see if I can share my screen. I want you guys to react to this tape live, live on the air, and give me your view of.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a first.
All right. I'm sure it's going to work, Sam.
Visual podcast.
Yeah, we're gonna see. Well, but you guys can talk. You know, I mean, look, you know.
Sure, yeah.
You're on the radio, so talk us, give us your reaction live.
This is an unfortunate reminder of, there was a high school coach who was watching Xavier Worthy's tape and was like, ooh, and I was like very excited about that YouTube video, and now I'm sad. So thanks. Oh, wow. It wow. worked.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go.
So here we go.
Wow.
Jordan Phillips, as he, and so you see, watch this guy blow up a double team.
Yeah, that's so solid.
You see this guy doing this consistently, guys, and I keep asking myself,
wow,
as I go through this film, what the hell am I missing?
what level is he playing at? He's in Florida.
He's in Florida at Ocoee, which is a pretty high level, you know, a pretty good school down there. And you see, now this is a highlight tape, so you see.
Yeah, I understand.
Sure. Yeah, we understand the concept of a highlight tape.
You got it.
Right, yeah. There's some
yeah,
vibe
he was
there.
He was doubled there, but got into the gap too quickly.
Some like,
so the double was worthless.
Ryan Glasgow, Willie Henry vibes. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, he gets low. That, I mean, you don't talk about pad level much, but that's a crab person right there.
So he plays with really good leverage because he's a wrestler too. Uses his hands. Well, his coach says that, you know,
wow.
The key for him is that he needs to be more of a student of the game. Really smart kid, so it's not about that, but to realize what teams are trying to do to him, so he can play off of that more, so he can anticipate better. Play his responsibilities better on the field. But as far as raw athleticism, power, and speed, this one doesn't seem like one of those got you take them and you know, 3 or 4 years down the line, maybe you have a guy that can contribute. This seems like a big body that could be a real dude for them if they get him.
Yeah, and the thing about these highlights that I like is that so he's got a gap that is his assignment, and the way he's making these plays is by he's not freelancing, right? He's getting into his gap, he's getting penetration, and like it's not he's not just doing what he wants to do. He's being gap sound, and that's something that you don't always see on highlight tape.
And I like that he's 295 right now. I'm like, you don't have to build him up to 295 in 2-3 years.
I like the new staff's approach of recruiting defensive tackles. I think the part where we didn't do that was bad.
They're recruiting a lot of defensive tackles. And then, like, I've been watching the Ravens, and I also been watching kind of like some of the Georgia defenses that McDonald was part of before then. And, like, they like having defensive tackles on the field. Like, they're going to play three of them at the same time.
I do too,
Seth. Well, no. You and I have been, like, begging for one. One defensive tackle would be, like, that's all. We would have been fine with that. But, like, the style that Michigan's going to, you can actually play these kinds of guys, like, right away.
Yeah, real quick, you want some? They line them up at fullback, too.
Okay, now I'm listening.
They line him up at fullback too, and he makes a few plays on his tape at fullback, you know, showing you a few things here and there.
Yeah, breaking some tackles.
So, hey man, I'm gonna stop sharing the screen now, and I'm gonna ask it again. What am I? Even if I've never seen the guy in person, never have him, you know, never had him come to a camp, I'm looking at that film. And I'm at least saying I got to throw an offer out there as a flyer. You know,
he's got size, he's got explosion already. Like, there's not a whole lot of projection left, right? I mean, you tack on another 10, 15 pounds, and he's ready to go.
Yeah, all I can think of is that the whole body of his work is inconsistent. But even if it's inconsistent, when you look at that, you got to say, well, maybe we can make him consistent.
Yeah. Chris Cantner, he's watching. He said, I watched this tape. I know nothing about defensive line, but that kid was impressive. Exactly. Exactly. So Michigan is, I feel confident in saying they're the team to beat. And I think that they're on commit watch. So we'll
see. He's coming
see.
Up to visit in June, right?
To visit this weekend.
Oh, okay.
He's coming up to visit this weekend, a dead period visit. He's coming up. His mom's coming up. His dad's coming up. His coach is coming up. They're all coming up.
So what does that mean? A dead period visit. Does that mean he can talk to coaches or no?
No.
It means all he can do is wander around Ann Arbor?
Correct.
Okay.
All right.
Can he go into the...
a 6'4", 290-pound gentleman, give him a high five and then leave him alone. You're weird. If you know who he is, you're weird. Just leave him alone.
Yeah, I mean, can he go over to the stadium? Can he go inside of the stadium? Can he go into the locker rooms? I mean, practice the weight rooms? Is he allowed to do that?
He can't do anything that the general public
can't.
And I know he can't go into the football building. Could he walk by the stadium? I don't know that he could go in the stadium unless he finds. I don't want to put any ideas out there.
Well, I have to tell you this, Sam. I was going by the football stadium yesterday, and it was curious to me that people were inside. And, you know, it used to be that anyone could wander into the football stadium pretty much anytime they wanted. And yesterday, it looked like that was the case. So, I don't know. Maybe they've just opened it up for the next week or two. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Seth, I think it was either Seth or Brian who made the point that let's say they get him. Whoever said it was dead on, I think that this is a recruitment that will get more intense as time goes. You know what it'll be like? This is exactly who it'll be like. It's not a different position, but when Mo Linguist was at Minnesota and he got that commitment from Rashad Bateman. And then down the line, then everyone as words started to get around, everyone from Georgia to Bama, all of them jumped in there trying to lure Rashad Bateman away. To Mo's credit, he was able to keep him locked at Minnesota. So hopefully, if Michigan is able to score a commitment from Jordan Phillips, that they could have similar luck here. So
yeah, Bama's class is coming together really slowly too. Like I think that their approach this season is almost like, let's see who we want and then take them.
isn't that Bama though?
Well, there's an Athletic article talking about the fact that people are coalescing around the idea of a 12-team playoff, and I was like, all right, I mean, the current system sucks, so let's just do it. You get some buys in there, you got to have some home games with 12 games, like, let's go.
Well, they ruined bowl games. They looked at that, and they go, well, no one even wants to play in the Peach Bowl anymore, so, like, what? Why not? Why not have part of the playoffs?
I wanted to get you guys, get your thoughts on, sort of relaying to us the sentiment you're getting from your readers on MGO blog about the effect of the transfer portal on their fandom in general, whether it's that how they look at recruiting, does it lessen that? Does it lessen their interest in the team?
Like the way that people generally feel about football right now? Like, do you want me to sort through that and then pick out the transfer portal part? Like,
or big picture, is it, they realize that it's going on around the college football world, that it's not unique to Michigan?
Talking about Michigan's problem with transfers is that, like, our admissions department, this goes back to, like, when I was in school and I couldn't get my credits from France to transfer. Like, the Michigan's athletics will let it. You know, we can't – without the academic people will not let anyone in, right? Like, you have to get someone, like, as a freshman, or you got to get them as a grad transfer. But, like, after they've got, you know, a few credits, they can't get them to count. So kids want to go to Michigan State or something instead.
Well, I mean, I think anyone who says that the transfer portal is negatively impacting their fandom with football, you know, unless they're saying the same thing about basketball, which they are not, then that's not really the source of their – I mean, personally, I'm not a big fan of the current situation because I just like having roster consistency. Like, one of the real pleasures of college sports is having a guy like Xavier Simpson over the course of 4 years and watching him develop, evolve. And from a guy who you didn't think was ever going to be a starter into, like, one of the key players on a high-end NCAA team who does all kinds of cool stuff. And so the transfer portal kind of brings you guys like Shondi and Mike Smith, who I love, but, you know, my relationship to those two guys isn't the same as my relationship to Xavier Simpson. Now, I know why that has to be the case, because the NCAA is like, what can we do that is not paying players? We're going to do whatever that is. But to me, the solution is more like, you know, we have a financial relationship with these players. They sign contracts and they're expected to live up to those contracts, which is fine as long as you are giving them money. So give them money. Yeah. The end.
Preaching to the choir.
Sorry. I know. Yeah.
I mean, I know. The NCAA, first of all, the NCAA just extended Mark Emmert, which
crazy. That just means he's doing the job that the presidents want him to do. He's doing a great job in there.
Yeah, that's very clarifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how easy would it be to just to dump him overboard and be like, oh, that guy didn't care about women, he sucks. Right, there's no cost to getting rid of Emmert. There's no cost. His contract was
Look, they need a fall guy. I said this to John Bacon earlier this morning. Chris Carter said everyone needs a fall guy, and he got lambasted for it. The presidents, college presidents are putting that theory into practice here, because that's exactly what Mark Emmert did. Put him out, let him take all the bullets for dragging his feet on NIL, you know, for not really pushing women's athletics to the degree that they should be pushing it. Let him take all the shots.
They had the opportunity right now to let him take all those shots. They could have been like, oh, yeah, all this stuff, all you know, being on the wrong side of history, it was all because of this guy. And then shove him out the door and then hire a guy just like him. They absolutely could have done that. I can't understand why not.
Brian, you nailed the point. The PR is so horrible for Mark Emmert right now. Like, this is, like, ideal time. And
yes.
This was the time that you extended him. Like,
you hired him as a fall guy. Let him take the fall. It's time to fall, man.
Well, I mean, but isn't Brian's point right? I mean, the university presidents or who's ever, you know, in charge of this must love what Emmert's doing, you know, and whether it's his foot dragging on NIL or anything else, it's got to be what they want.
Otherwise, never underestimate the ability of rich people to shield other rich people, from accountability. Never underestimate that.
I don't want to get too political, but yes.
Yeah. Speaking of politics, I don't know if anyone else noticed how fast some of the SEC schools recently passed NIL legislation and had it, and it's going to take effect July 1st. So yeah, the second that they was being used against them in recruiting, all of a sudden Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, like those states move fast.
They crossed through 2021 and changed it to 2022.
That's the same thing Jim Harbaugh's doing.
Fellas, if this is the last time we do this until the fall, it has been a pleasure once again this year. I know you were looking forward to the season with great nervousness.
Anticipation.
But it's still going to be fun when the whole crew is back together. So I appreciate you guys doing this, man. It's always a blast.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me this year, man.
What are you thanking me for, Craig? You're going to be back next week.
I'll be around, you know, and I'm thinking of talking about Rudolph Virchow next week, or Virchow. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's an example of how a really smart person can really be wrong about things sometimes. And I think that has general relevance to everything, and including sports. But I just learned about him yesterday.
Summer of Craig starts next Thursday. Summer of Craig starts next Thursday.
But, I mean, we could come back. I mean, I'm happy for – I mean, Seth and I are expert in, like, 1881 football. We can talk about that. I'd love that.
If you want to do an episode on the Haitian Revolution, I'm there, man.
See, we have lots of things we could talk about.
Well, guys, we are out of time. Appreciate it as always. See the rest of you folks tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.